Hello.
I forgot what episode this was.
Four.
Episode four. I guess 3.5 because we're going from...
That's true.
Part two of our parenting that we didn't finish.
Parenting expectations.
My name is Matt.
I'm Christina. Oh, welcome to Real Talk with the Roche Sam, where the energy's high, but the audio quality's better.
Yeah, we got a new mic.
I don't know if it's better or not. So we'll see.
I'm sure it is.
Before jumping into expectations, I wanted to talk about what happened this week because...
We had an incident.
Yes. You were there, so yeah. I want you to tell it from your perspective.
Christina was supposed to go to Dallas yesterday, but she didn't have to. But we already booked our babysitters to come over and spend time with Emerson. We just kept it, and they came over. I guess only one of them came over. And they were having a good time, and she was doing good, and they took a nap together, and they were playing, and they came downstairs, and I went to hand the babysitter a juice pouch for Emerson, and the babysitter was holding Emerson with her left arm, and then was trying to grab the juice pouch with her right arm, and they're on the couch. Emerson launches off the couch, and the babysitter tried to catch her. And she only really tried to almost grabbed her feet, and then it flipped Emerson with her face going down, and she landed straight on her face on the hardwood floor.
The way that you described it was her face hit the floor, her neck was out, and like she hit her chest.
It was like a scorpion, so her legs went over her head pretty much.
And I wasn't in the room when this happened. I was in my office, but the door was open. And I heard the fall, and before Emmy even started crying, I knew she had hit the ground. So I came running out. Matt was holding her. And when Emmy falls a lot, and usually she can get upset, but she's usually pretty resilient. She doesn't cry a lot. And so when I heard this just horrible crying, I knew something was really wrong. And her whole face was red, and she was crying so hard she couldn't catch her breath, and we were worried that she had hurt her neck or something.
Yeah, or concussion.
And shortly after, I was holding her nose started to bleed. And that scared us enough that we decided to take her to the emergency room. And it was...
checked out, or just, I don't know, just to make sure she didn't have any brain bleed or anything like that. I don't know. Or like a skull fracture.
We're total first-time parents. And even the receptionist was like, yeah, you guys look like first-time parents. And not in a negative way, but I think a lot of first-time parents, when they drop their kids, it's really scary. But what we did find out, it was good we went to the doctor because you do want to monitor that initially.
Especially with how she was breathing. She wasn't breathing right, which was weird. And then the nosebleed also made it more scary.
And the doctor was, they were so kind to us, and the nurse was really sweet, and they kept us from monitoring, and she was fine. And he told us about this study that was done on babies who had been dropped. And the ones who fall face first and hit their forehead actually have a lower chance of brain damage.
Yeah.
But the babies who hit their heads on the sides or the back have a higher chance of an actual brain bleed.
Or a skull fracture. Yeah.
And I mean, she fell pretty far. It was like 3 feet and maybe higher because the way she jumped off.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we might have overreacted a little bit, but I felt like the peace of mind knowing she was okay was worth the time.
Yeah, 100% is worth the time.
And I really liked the doctors here in Texas because I did not feel like they were super invasive. We're going to tell a story later about how Emmy got COVID when she was 6 weeks old. And that was a totally different experience. You know, we went into this office.
They didn't want to give her an MRI because they didn't want to give her like radiation
exposure
that she didn't need at this age. And they made a few other comments that were really nice. They were just really sweet and not invasive on what they were wanting to do or overbearing or anything like that.
No, they just did a physical evaluation, made sure that she could drink and eat. They were checking her breathing. And we were sent home about an hour and a half after we got there. It was good we went in, again, just for our peace of mind. But it definitely rattled us. I think Matt and I were probably more distraught than the baby. the baby was happy and playing the whole time we were there. And
she made friends.
She was playing peekaboo in the curtains to all the nurses. And I think that's one of my favorite things about having a baby is how much joy she brings to other people just in passing. I feel like I'm her bodyguard. And, you know,
she's a famous celebrity.
Yeah. Anytime we go to the grocery store, people are so happy. And that's really fun. Anyway, jumping into the topic for today. So we wanted to do a part two on parenting expectations after we had the baby. Maybe we just talk about expectations first before we start getting into all the details. Because I was a nanny for so long, I had been around kids. So I had a general idea of what it would be like. I had not ever done overnight shifts with babies. So I didn't really know what to expect other than to brace myself. And I don't even know that I had too many expectations other than it was going to be really hard. I thought breastfeeding was going to be easy. But as we'll get to, it wasn't. What was your thoughts?
So I guess really the only experience I had with babies under two were my niece lived with us for her first 2 years. And the thing is, I never had full care of her where I had to take care of her for a full day or a week, or I never had her full time. I guess I didn't get enough experience with what it would be like having that little of a baby, because it was more just like in passing, and we would play, we would go do something together. We'd go to it was fun when she was around us. It wasn't like I had to deal with all the other parts. Yeah, the responsibilities of everything else. So my expectations, at least, so I thought, I'm just going to be blunt of my thoughts. I thought she was going to be a potato for a long time. Like, I thought she wasn't going to be able to move so much. I thought she would be like more just sit around and hang out. I feel like I've seen a lot of babies that are just hang out and sit around and don't scream all the time, don't cry all the time, aren't frustrated all the time. Like, I know that was, this is before, obviously. I didn't know too much. But that was like my expectation, was that for a few months, I thought she was going to be just hanging out, eating, sleeping, playing a little bit, nothing crazy. I think we just got a very energetic baby really quickly.
I also want to say that Emmy has six cousins, and her youngest cousin is 2 months, I think, younger than her.
Older.
Or older than her, sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
So when he came, he was a chiller.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He would just sit in this little baby chair and hang out. I mean, he does have his older brother.
Yeah, he didn't cry. He doesn't cry much. He just chills.
Wherever you put him, he took a nap. Lucy would literally just stick him on the couch, and she put up bumpers, and he was safe, of course. But he would just sit there or sleep, or she'd have a little bed on the floor, and he would just sleep. And that was my most recent exposure to a baby, and I was like, okay. It'll be fine. It'll totally be fine. And the youngest baby I watched was... he was 3 to 6 months, I believe, when I first started watching him. And I had him from 4 a.m. till 2 or 3 p.m, because the parents were police officers. So they were on really weird schedules. So I showed up before he was even awake. And I remember him being busy during the day, but he just chilled. So my thought was like, okay, we'll have 6 months before she starts crawling, where we're all a little bit relaxed and hanging out. And I think that's where we'll just get into
the energy,
the reality of our situation. Okay, so when she came out, she was moving and wanted to go. So we bring her home. And first of all, babies have no idea what the difference is between night and day. So every night, it was like that was go time for her. We'd survive the day and we would basically just tag team nights. I think from the beginning, we were doing like 50-50. So either I would start the evening and then you would wake up at 1 or 2 a.m. and come down and take her. And then I would go to sleep.
Can I rewind just 1 second? Mm-hmm. We started off also, we were sleeping in the same bed at the time. So like you would sleep and then I would take her and we would be in the same bed.
Mm-hmm.
And then I guess we'll get into what happened later.
Even at the beginning, we tried this bedside bassinet. So we had our king size bed. We were still sleeping sideways, and Emmy had this little crib thing that was on the edge of the bed. And every time we would get her to sleep, we would put her down, and it was like 3 minutes, I swear, and she would wake up. And after the first week of both Matt and I truly getting less than 2 hours of sleep a night, because even if we were taking shifts, whoever was sleeping, quote unquote, was getting woken up constantly by the baby. So after the first week or two, there was a spare guest room in the house. One of us would go upstairs and sleep, and the other one would stay with the baby. And to make a long story short, essentially, we gave up on the bassinet after the first month. We had a Dock-a-Tot, which is like a little baby cuddle pillow thing. It looks like a U, a gigantic neck pillow, per se. It is not sleep approved. It's not sleep safe. Don't do as we do. That was a result of me not being in a mental place to handle these really long overnights.
I think the other thing that was really nice about that is that she was literally right next to us. So we could see her breathing while we were right there. And if she made any noise or anything like that, she was like inches from our face. So it felt safer that she was closer to us rather than if I'm on the side of the bed and she's in her bassinet and I can't even see over the bassinet unless I get up and look into it. It just felt safer that I could see her breath, hear her. I mean, I felt safer with her next to me, even in the Dock-a-Tot.
And our conversation is not rehearsed. So I do think we need to go back and explain the first 3 days we had her. The feelings of intense anxiety were unlike anything I ever expected.
I feel like I've had that for months, at least a minimum a month of fear and stress. I still fear her sleeping even to this day.
I do too. That doesn't go away. But the first 2 or 3 days after we came home from the hospital, I remember we both sat there and stared at her.
Yeah, I didn't sleep.
Because we were so terrified something would happen to her. And she was asleep in the bassinet. And I would just sit there and I would have my arm in the bassinet. And I would just make sure she was breathing. Because Matt was in the far side of the bed, almost parallel to the headboard, he couldn't get out. And I was so paranoid that I had to be right next to her. I thought I was going to have a panic attack and die. He would nudge me and be like, "Is she breathing?" And I'd reach over and make sure she was okay, and she was. And after the first 3 days, I was like, okay, we made it past day one, she's alive. We made it past day two, she's alive. We made it past day three. Okay, I think I'm tired. And so that's where we transitioned to really keeping her in the bassinet. And then because of the consistent wake-ups, and it wasn't like you could just pick her up from the position we were in. You had to stand up to like fully get her out. So by the time you got her back to sleep, you were wide awake. And that was part of the reason why we ended up using the Dock-a-Tot, because we could soothe her and keep her essentially in a sleep state without getting up all the way. And I had basically never heard about co-sleeping. That's very, I feel, culturally frowned upon here. And so,
and that's only in America. Like every other country in around the world, it's very normal for this to happen. And you can keep going, but there's so many studies about debunks of the negatives that people think co-sleeping does.
I see a lot is there's a lot of misinformation. So what is very dangerous is people who co-sleep unprepared. And looking back, I would have made sleeping arrangements completely different had I known. We were just surviving, essentially. We weren't even looking at phones because of how tired and busy we were. I was still trying to breastfeed. And when that didn't work, I was pumping. I would breastfeed her throughout the day. And then I would pump on top of that to get a milk reserve, essentially. And so we're washing pump parts. And it was like for every hour she slept, she'd wake up for 2 hours. And it was like a cycle. Whenever she would go to sleep, we would rush around trying to get the pump parts ready. I didn't know about putting them in the fridge and reusing them for 24-hour periods. Every time I pumped, we were washing them. And they are a pain to wash on top of setting up and
sterilizing them. Like we would have to zap them.
And storing the milk, putting the dates on it, all kinds of, I mean, there's so many steps I didn't know. And if I would have known what I know now about pumping, I would have probably tried continuing to breastfeed. I don't know. We'll just let that be what it is. But what I'm trying to get at is co-sleeping is dangerous when you are not prepared. And I remember there was one day, this was probably, she was 3 months old. No, maybe 2 months, somewhere around there. I had pulled her out of the crib to soothe her to sleep. And I was so tired, I fell asleep. And when I woke up, I'm at the foot of the bed parallel. I'm not in the center of the bed. And when I woke up, I was terrified because I fell asleep. I have never fallen asleep like that before. And she was safe. She was in my arms. But I just spiraled. I was like, she could have fallen off the bed. The bed was still on the bed frame. So it was like 3 or 4 feet off the ground. It really scared me. And that at that point, I started researching super heavily. What can I do? The bassinet's not working. And I came across an Instagram page called Happy Co-Sleeper. And I started learning about what that journey would be like. So we didn't officially start co-sleeping till she was about 5 months old.
We tried when we moved to Texas. The first month was, we tried here, the first month here, we tried to do start her off, like just getting her to sleep in her arms and then moving her to the crib. And she would just wake up after 2 hours and be screaming her head off. And we after a month, like I don't even know how long we did that for. I think we did it for a month or so.
I did it the entire time I was at my parents' house.
Yeah.
So how long was that?
A month.
So she was in an actual crib. When we moved from California to Texas, I was alone with the baby at my parents' house. And they had a crib. And my parents were very pro-crib, which there's nothing wrong with that. I think that is the absolute safest place for a baby. But when you get up 8-9 times a night, you're miserable. After doing this for 4 months straight, not having one full night's sleep for 4 months. And I actually passed out, probably from a combination of things, but I do think there was a huge attribution. Is that the right word?
I don't think so. Accumulation? Like things?
A lot of things, but sleep definitely contributed to me passing out. And thank God I didn't have the baby, but I passed out and I fell so hard, I had a bruise on my shoulder, a huge bruise on my shoulder for 2 weeks.
That was the last day that you were at your parents, and then we were just like, just come over here and stay here, because we were like, it's just not worth being away from each other if something happened.
It was really scary, yeah. And I think just like 10 minutes after, my dad was home, thank goodness, I just started yelling for my dad, I need you to come in here, because I woke up, I didn't even realize what happened. I was in my bed, and then the next thing I know, I'm on the floor, completely crumpled up against the crib. And I don't think it was a seizure, but I was shaking violently, and I had no idea where I was. I didn't know what was going on. I couldn't say anything for the first 10 seconds. I haven't passed out like my entire life, so that was really scary. So I called Matt, and I said, don't panic, but I fell, and I think that it would make me feel safer if we were all together. Because if I was by myself and that happened, what about the baby? And so we packed everything up that day and I moved.
Luckily, that was towards the end of the construction part. We were pretty much livable, at least upstairs by that time. So when they moved in, at least we had one room that was baby friendly.
And I got to give a lot of credit to my parents, because they basically dropped everything to help pack me up. And it was a very stressful day because you dropped everything and drove over. My parents helped basically disassemble the entire crib. We put all my belongings in the car, drove an hour away, set it up again. And there was only one room you and I were sharing in this house. We're currently in it. And it's probably not more than, I don't know, how many feet is this? It's like a
10 by 10.
10 by 10, yeah, room. So when you have a king size bed, a crib, and all your belongings that you own in one room, it was very small.
Yeah. It was manageable, though. At least we could fit the king bed, and obviously it was cramped, but we could all fit in it without it being, like, no walking space.
But we didn't have a working kitchen, so I was pumping and washing bottle parts in the bathtub up here that is really gross. And we continued to use the crib, and because your dad was staying here, we didn't have the other bed set up, so there was nowhere for us to go. It was like, neither of us were sleeping. You were working all day, so you were exhausted. And I couldn't go anywhere with her. It was like I was stuck in this room for a while till we could finish the downstairs completely. On top of, we haven't even talked about the baby with all this, but she was busy. Like, I even think from the beginning, she just wanted to move. She was so frustrated that she couldn't move and couldn't do things. She would just cry all the time.
Yeah.
Borderline colicky. Do you have a memory of one of the harder nights that you can recall?
They were all hard. I don't know if I can pinpoint one hard night over another. They're all were pretty difficult. I think the hardest night.
COVID?
No. That was so scary because the breathing thing, but we were just monitoring that the whole time. I think one of the harder nights was the night that you and my family all had a big party and Christina had a little too many drinks.
I got drunk because I hadn't drank in 13 months. And because I was breastfeeding, I was not drinking. And I won't say who, but someone is very good at filling drinks up without you realizing. And I do remember the video, and I want that video deleted. Basically, your mom was petting my face, and I was screaming about the time. I was like, it's only 7:30. I still have all night with the baby. How am I going to live?
Yeah.
And I was falling apart, and then I got sick, and I didn't feel safe to be around the baby. So you basically had her the entire night.
Yeah, because I had her because the whole time you guys were pretty much having fun drinking because everyone was drinking except for me because I don't drink. And so I had her that whole time everyone was having like a party. And then after Casino had her ordeal, she was out of commission 100%. Like, Chris, it was like I was taking care of two people at the same time, and they're both incoherent of what was going on. So I think that was probably one of the most difficult nights because I was like trying to monitor you, trying to monitor the baby. Like, it was like really difficult. That was probably the hardest night.
Yeah, I believe that. I don't remember it.
Yeah, it wasn't very fun.
Thank you for giving me a moment of human fun. The daytime was fun, but I did not enjoy the aftermath.
Don't drink with people that can outdrink you, because then you try and just keep up, and then 2 seconds later, you're on the floor.
Yeah, I think there was a lot of crying amongst the sister-in-laws of, I love you. No, I love you. I'm not doing good as a mom. I'm not either. It's okay.
You guys are dancing with the girls. Like, you guys are having so much fun.
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I remember.
Until it wasn't.
The girls, like, Mackenzie and Clementine were having, like, the best time ever with you. And Andrew was crying because she was so happy to see someone interacting with her kids and that she had, like, someone in her family that she could relate to. And she was just so, like, over happy that you were there and having a good time. So it was good for a while, and then it wasn't.
Yeah, I'm sorry that I inflicted your worst night. I think one of my worst nights was when she had COVID. because the night started out normal. We had actually seen all of our friends, and one of our friends just had a new baby. And from all intents and purposes, I had no reason to know that Emmy was sick. She wasn't showing symptoms. She wasn't anything. We had been relatively careful about who came over from the beginning. And so we got home. She was fine. We did our normal, okay, I'll take the first shift. You'll go somewhere else. And when she started to sleep, she was doing this really weird breathing thing where she would breathe in and then just stop breathing. And it happened multiple times, and I'd wake her up and she was okay. But
she would like wake up and gasp for air. That was like the big thing that was like really scary, is that she would breathe in and then not breathe in. She would gasp for air when you would wake her up. She'd go like that.
Yeah, it was very scary. So I didn't sleep pretty much till 2. And then I called Matt to come down because I started to worry we needed to go somewhere. Maybe it wasn't 2 because your brother is a nurse. He's a nurse. And they were still awake and they said to give her Tylenol and to watch her and she should be okay. And by the morning, she was still having breathing problems. And your mom was helping that night too. We were trying everything, like steam. And we had a little Frida mom nose sucker we were using, which was really helpful. But in the morning, we decided to take her into the emergency room because of how scary the breathing was. So we went to urgent care and they wouldn't treat her because her fever. Oh, that was the other thing. She had a fever and it kept spiking. I think it got to 102.
101, yeah.
101, 102, but it was like 101.9.
Yeah.
Super high. So that was really scary. And urgent care wouldn't do anything because when an infant that young has a fever that high, it's considered an emergency. So we ran over to the emergency room and urgent care was great because they called them in advance, told them we were coming. So when we walked in, they took us in right away, which was good. We got in and the first thing I asked the doctor was, can we just run the least invasive tests to find out what's going on? And they basically said she could die. So we need to draw blood and we need to take an MRI and we need to do all these tests. And, you know, as a parent, you're sitting there, you're like, my kid could die? What? So, of course, run the test, do the thing. I don't know what else I'm going to say. So the nurses came in.
So the reason they said that, there's a thing called like RS, like respiratory. There's a breathing thing in infants that can be deadly. I forgot what it's called. It's like respiratory something. I don't know.
No idea.
That is what they were worried about. That's what they thought that she could have. So that's what they were testing for, really.
So the nurse came in. There was 2 of them, and they were going to try and draw her blood. And they couldn't get the blood out. I don't know what the technical terms are. So then they ended up bringing another nurse. And it was horrible because you had 3 nurses that poor Emerson didn't know. She's already not feeling good. They're pinning her down, and she was wearing a white onesie. There was just blood all over the place. They poked her, and Matt and I both were basically, the nurses kept saying, you need to comfort her, and we were trying.
And they couldn't get her vein, too. They were having trouble getting her vein. And honestly, I think the one that was drawing the blood was like new because she was like getting trained almost while they were like teaching her while she was doing it. I felt uncomfortable. It was almost like hands-on training instead of, I don't know how to explain it.
It was absolutely horrible. There was blood everywhere. And at one point it was so awful that Matt started to tear up and him and I basically were just hugging each other while our child was crying because I couldn't even look at her. Her face was like purple from crying. It made me so sad.
Yeah, she was screaming at the top of her lungs. And she was like looking at us, just like telling, like literally her face was like, tell them to stop, pretty much. That's what it looked like. She's trying to say.
It wasn't even tell them to stop. It was, why are you letting them do this to me? On top of getting blood drawn, they had to get a urine sample, which meant that she had to get a catheter, which is ridiculous for a baby. They couldn't get it. They couldn't get any sample. And so they basically put like a plastic bag in her diaper. Then they brought in the MRI machine and they did that, even though that wasn't what I wanted. And we were there for probably 2 or 3 hours, maybe. And Matt had left to go get some food because we had been pretty much awake all night. At this point, it was late in the afternoon. And while Matt was gone, the doctor came in and sat down and said, good and bad news. She has COVID. The good news is there's nothing we need to do. She'll be fine. The bad news is it's scary. But that's it. You guys can go home.
Here's some Tylenol.
And then they charged us thousands of dollars. I'm not going to say how much because I could not believe everything that was done and it was not explained. They gave me a form that said the hospital's not liable if we have malpractice or something like that. And I actually refused to sign it because I remember reading it and thinking, what the heck? I understand they're covering themselves, but I asked them, I said, if I don't sign this, are you going to deny us treatment? And this was before they had done all the poking and stuff. And I'm really glad to this day that I didn't, because after we left, 2 days later, Emmy basically had to sleep sitting up. So I basically just sat up in bed with her for 2 days after that. So that was hard. I called the hospital and said, I don't understand why these invasive treatments were done. Why couldn't we have just ran a COVID test? And if it came back positive, why did we need any of that stuff? And they couldn't give me an answer. So they opened a whole case about it and they didn't respond back to me till December. And I had reached out 3 or 4 times. I actually went to the hospital itself. And at the hospital, because when I called the number, they said they had a people resources department. So I go to the hospital. I go to the first department. They say, oh, you have to go to building ABC. So I walk like half a mile across the campus to this other building. And they say, oh, no, you need to go to the legal department over here. So then I walk over to the legal department. I find the door. I knock on it. And it's completely locked. Some little squirrely lady came to the door and peeped open. And I said, I wanted to talk to somebody about the care that I received. And they basically had me come in and they're like, yeah, we don't do that here. You have to go to another city that's in LA. We don't have a branch here for that. And I was just like, why would someone on the phone tell me it's here? So I called that number again. I re-escalated the case. And the woman who had taken the initial intake form for it had gone out on leave and it had just gone stale. So Emmy's born in September. She got COVID in October time. I didn't hear from them till December. At that point, we had flown back for Christmas, which is why I went in person. And then I didn't hear back from them again until February. And that was after I had called them. And they were trying to bill me thousands of dollars for all this stuff. And I didn't want to pay it until I had a better understanding of why. And I'm going to give the hospital a lot of credit because the doctor called me directly and he talked me through the procedures and the risks and all of that. And I told them I'm not expecting anything. I will happily pay the bill. I just wanted to talk to someone. But because of how poor they handled the situation, they ended up completely comping the entire bill, which I think that's important to share because advocating for yourself is so important. And if you want to go on a least invasive route, I say do it, because a lot of that felt very unnecessary if we had just gotten back a COVID test. So take that information for what it is. Take care of your kids. Their health is first. But that whole situation was a lot of stress across the board for months just because of how traumatic it was for us and having to continue to reach out just to get a very simple answer that should have been answered a week after we left.
Yeah, I agree.
Other baby expectations. Emerson is very busy constantly. I think since she has came along, there's never a moment of rest. There's never a moment of sitting. There's always something to do. So that has been really taxing on both of us.
Yeah, I think one other thing is like I've seen my nephews and nieces sit down and watch a show. Like I've seen them like just hang out and watch Bluey or whatever show that's on. And they can just hang out. I expected that was normal for all babies. To just, oh, something exciting is on. If I needed a break, I could just turn to the TV and be like, I know everyone and people are weird about screen time, but if I need a break, watch this for 30 minutes and we'll just hang out and sit here. She cannot watch a show. She doesn't care about a TV. She doesn't care about sitting. She wants to just run and move and grab things and bite things and put her hands in places that she doesn't need to put her hands in. And it is nonstop all the time. She doesn't rest. Even when she sleeps, she's kicking and squirming while she's sleeping.
Even though that's one of the hardest parts about parenthood, that's also one of the specialist things because everything is new to her. And you sent me a video this week on Instagram that was talking about like a kid sitting on the counter. Oh, they see a glass on the counter. It has water in it. They don't know it's going to break and they throw it on the ground. They shatter the glass. Guess what? That was an experiment. And if we stop and intervene that experiment, they're not going to know. So even though to us it's obvious, I think that's been a big thing for us, letting go of the mess. Our entire downstairs is covered in tissues and paper towels because
and diapers,
because she likes to take things out of the box and throw them and then put them back in and then throw them all over the place again. And
she likes to dump all of her crackers everywhere she sees them. She just a whole box of them, just pour them all out. Yeah.
She also loves straws. Ever since she was little, she saw us drink from drinks and she said, "What is that?" And she was drinking out of a straw at 6-7 months. No problem.
I wouldn't say no problem. She still chokes on the water.
She chokes, but not so much anymore. And
she loves it, though. Even if she chokes, she'll keep wanting to try. Like, she does not want to stop trying.
She has to figure everything out. She has to climb on everything. When she gets it set in her mind, I'm going to do this, it's game over.
I think that's one of the hard things that we're dealing with now, obviously. But I think down the road in the future, when she's a little older and bigger, I think this is going to be such a positive thing for, I think she's just so athletic already. I think it's just like when she can put that towards a goal or like an achievement of some sort, she is going to be leaps and bounds of where she needs to be because she's so determined and so energetic. She'll practice. She practices going up and down the stairs 4, 5, 6 times in a row. She'll go up and then down and you just want to keep practicing going up and down. If she falls, she wants to go back to that same spot and try it again. Even at 10 months old, she's doing that.
And she's very aware. She sees us walking up and down the stairs and she wants to do it too. Okay, I'm crawling. I don't fully walk yet, but I'm going to try and walk down the stairs. So she wants to hold your hand. Her legs aren't even the size of the stair and she's trying to walk down like a big girl. And even that's the coolest part of parenthood is watching her discover like life through her eyes because she is so expressive. She's always been that way. You can talk to her and she doesn't fully understand, but she's trying. She'll furrow her brow and look at me and I'll say, "Okay, give me a kiss." And she'll look at me and she'll scrunch her little face up and then I'll lean in and hug her and I'll lean back and she'll look at me again. I'll say, "Okay, can I have a kiss?" And she'll figure it out. She'll lean in and kiss you. And that's amazing. Even Bubbles, like when we got that bubble wand out the first time, she just looked at me like, "What in the heck is this stuff? I don't know what this is. I don't want to touch it." And then we do it a couple times. And then she gets curious and she starts reaching out and exploring. And then she starts to connect. When you blow, the bubbles are happening. So then she starts going with her lips. Yeah. And it's, dude, you're amazing.
Yeah. Now, I don't know. So I don't know the achievements and I don't know what ages kids learn things and whatever, but I tell her to open the door and close the door and she will grab the door and she'll open it and close it when I tell her to. I'll say, "Hey, can you turn off the light? Turn on the light." And she'll, obviously I'm holding her, but she'll grab the light switch and turn it off. And it just doesn't seem like she should be doing that at this age. Like just based on, she can't speak. She doesn't really understand anything, but she just knows what I'm saying. And I just think that's really cool that she's figuring it out so fast.
One of the earliest signs that I saw was when we would say, "Maple, come here," to our dog. Emmy will stop what she's doing and start looking around the room. And I don't know if that's a result of her being trampled at one point by Maple, so she's scared. But usually she'll look around, she'll stop. When Maple comes in, she is so happy. She'll start flailing her arms, smiling, giggling, and she just wants to throw herself at Maple.
She loves Maple so much. Like sometimes, like right out when we'll come down from a nap and she'll see Maple flapping her little tail when we're walking down the stairs, she will just let out the biggest squeak that you could hear when she sees Maple. And it's literally the cutest thing because she loves her dog so much.
And with all those good things, I think you touched on it last time. The love I have for this little being is indescribable. I feel like I want to eat her. Like, I have aggressive love for her because I just, even when I'm so tired, like, I can be at the end of my rope. And I see you do this too. We still have it in us to be so gentle and patient with her, even when we're falling apart. And it makes me emotional because I look at her and I see you and I see a little bit of me and I just can't even wrap my mind around the odds of her being here. Like her out of all the little sperms and eggs that could have been and she made it, I just can't believe she's here and doing as amazing as she is. And she is heterochromia, one of her eyes. She has blue eyes, but she has brown speckles at the top. And that reminds me a lot of Matt because he has different colored eyes. His eyes are like green and brown and hazel and gold and all these amazing colors. And when I look at her and she looks up, there's just magic like in her. That's what it feels like. And I just can't even start to describe how unique of an experience it is to have created something from someone that I love so much.
It's like a miracle. A baby being born is a miracle because it's just unbelievable how she's here and she's just growing and so smart. And until you experience something that you've created, it's unbelievable to watch.
I almost feel overwhelmed because we do want another child. I do not want one right now. I'm too tired. But part of me sometimes thinks the what ifs. If we decided to have a baby this year, it would be different than a baby we would have next year. And then I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't wait to know who that little person would be. It's wild, crazy. It's got its fun moments. It's got its broken, raw moments. And I wouldn't change it for the world. I really wouldn't.
Me either. After seeing her personality and who she is, it's like you're so curious what the next one's going to be and what their personality is going to be and how different they are from your first one. And it's the curiosity and the excitement that comes with it is cool.
Yeah. I feel like I have to mentally prepare myself that it's going to be a girl with as much energy as Emerson. Because yes. If I say it's going to be a chiller boy, my expectations are in the toilet now.
Yeah, no, I'm expecting the same thing that we created this time to be here. So we got to be prepared mentally and physically before we make that decision, just in case. Because if we had that right now and we had two of these, I don't know how we'd survive.
I think we'd die. Yeah. We probably would.
Of just exhaustion.
Probably.
Yeah. Is there any other things that you thought that expectations versus reality that you can think of?
I didn't know diaper changes were going to be so hard because I've never met a baby who alligator rolls like Emerson. And I change probably 50% of her diapers standing up or while she's moving because she refuses to sit still.
Yeah.
So that's hard. And I also didn't realize clothes were going to be so difficult. Whoever invented snaps, I hope you're out of business.
Yeah, I have plenty of baby idea for like clothing and for holding bottles. I have so many ideas that would be so much more effective than what is out on the market right now. I don't know why the other things aren't more popular. Even just like Velcro. Why is there not more Velcro clothes?
I agree.
Velcro is so much easier. Just boom. Why good. Snap? Why is there snaps? The zips aren't good either.
Why are the snaps so freaking difficult?
Yeah.
Because the snaps, I had to pinch my fingers and hurt my fingers. We are snapping this every 30 minutes. And we have given up on snaps. We basically just put her in t-shirts and call it a day.
Oh, yeah.
But when she was really little and we were bottle feeding her, we were talking about making a prototype to hold the bottle so that parents could, you know, exist and semi do other things when a baby sleeps on you. And then 2 months ago, I saw it. There was a bottle holder on the market. And I don't know that it was there before because we had looked and I couldn't find anything.
Me either. I had this idea when she was like, what, like a month old. I was like, dude, my wrist feels like it snapped because I'm just holding it at such a weird angle for so long that my wrist hurts so bad. I'm like, there's got to be something that can just hold the bottle for me. And I was coming up with all these ideas of what should I have it tied to your chin? Should I have it tied to your, like, how do we figure it out? And I had an idea. And then we just, obviously life, it's too hard to create something like that, forming a baby. But something came on the market, what, like 7-8 months later? And it was the only one that we've seen.
Yeah, so I guess we can't become millionaires now off of a bottle holder because it's already been done. The last thing I wanted to talk about, because we're almost at the hour mark, is wrapping up the co-sleeping thoughts. Because around 5 months when I officially moved, I think it was probably January time because your dad had gone back home. We had the room and space. I bought a very firm queen bed that essentially goes straight on the floor. And the entire room is baby-proofed, and we sleep basically, especially when she was younger, I slept with no blankets. I wore 2 layers of clothes and 1 small pillow, and that's it. And the baby and I would sleep like that. I had a mini fridge, so it literally was big enough to hold like 4 Coke cans, and we put the formula in that so I can just reach over at night, feed her, and then basically go back to sleep, and I sleep in a cuddle curl. So we had agreed as a couple that for our arrangement, temporarily, it made sense for Matt to sleep in another room and me and the baby to sleep in a room so that he could get sleep and handle her during the day and I get rest during the day. Wait, did I say that right? You get rest during night and you handle her during the day. I get some rest at night because now I'm not getting up to get her. Like, I can turn over, feed her, cuddle curl her, put the bottle back in, and go back to sleep myself instead of getting up, waking up, and all that. And, you know, if anyone's curious on co-sleeping, I highly recommend Happy Co-Sleeper on Instagram. There's a lot of great tips out there, but the rule of thumb is Safe Sleep 7. You can look those up if you wanted to. But if you are truly following the safe sleep rules that are listed, the chances of SIDS or infant death is very low. The scariest thing about co-sleeping is unprepared co-sleeping. So falling asleep on the couch with your baby, because positional asphyxiation is one of the scariest dangers with that. But if you're prepared, I would just say for new parents, have the knowledge and tools and resources in the case that you did end up co-sleeping on accident, rather than not being prepared and falling asleep on accident. Next time, I don't want this to be the sleeping arrangement, but it's what we need to do to survive so I can function at work.
Yeah.
How's your experience been with that? Some people will say, don't you miss like sleeping in the same bed as your spouse? And are you not spending time together? And I think people misunderstand that as, oh, you're not close to your spouse. And to me, it's literally temporary. We're keeping the baby as safe as we can, and we make time for each other outside of that.
So since I'm like an extremely light sleeper, anytime a noise is made, I'm up very quickly. It's really hard for me to even sleep in the room with the baby. Every time she wakes up, I'm up no matter what. I think due to my bad sleep, because I am like, and when I'm awake, it's really hard for me to go back to sleep, where Christina's the opposite, where it's like, she can wake up, put the bottle in her mouth, and
snuggle her, and then she could fall right back asleep. I don't have that capability. So I think it's really nice for me that we're doing this, because I wouldn't be able to sleep the way that you guys do, because I would be up. Even if I wasn't taking care of her, I'd still be up because I'm such a light sleeper. I also read like there are 6 myths about co-sleeping, and the first myth is your baby needs to learn how to self-soothe. The part of the brain that required self-soothing have not developed in a baby, so they're unable to self-soothe. The other myth is the best bedtime for babies is around 7 p.m. And the fact is that there's no evidence that has a specific bedtime that's more beneficial for babies. The third myth is babies should sleep for 12 hours overnight, which definitely is not accurate. Like,
Emmy sleeps 8 hours a night if we're lucky.
If you're lucky. For example, low sleep needs newborn to about 9 hours in a 24-hour period, while other healthy babies may need 18 hours in a 24-hour period. So it ranges. It's not like specific per baby.
Myth 4, sleep training is necessary to teach a baby how to sleep. The fact for this one is sleep is a biological process regulated by sleep pressure and circadian rhythm. It is not a skill that can be taught. Babies sleep in the womb before they are born without being taught. Myth 5, sleep training reduces the amount of time a baby is awake overnight. Research shows that the fact that the babies who undergo sleep training do not have fewer wake-ups than babies who do not undergo sleep training.
Here's the 6th. Feeding, holding, and rocking your baby to sleep will make them clingy and overly dependent. Research shows that babies whose caregivers are sensitive, responsive, and nurturing are more likely to be securely attached to their caregivers and become more competent and independent as they grow.
When babies co-sleep with their mothers and they're close, their heart rates and their blood pressure is actually regulated because they're close and they can literally sense and feel that. To each their own, I understand the scare around co-sleeping, but I think that the stigma, the negativity around it, everyone always asks, is she sleeping in her bed yet? My response is always, no. And I don't get too snotty about it, but sometimes I want to say, would you like to come over and try? Because I can't do it. I just can't. And this is what works for us. And I don't know why sleeping arrangements matter to people or why they feel the need to ask.
There's also another thing is that when I took Emmy outside and it was like 65 degrees, it was like 7 or 8 o'clock at night. And it was like 65 degrees. And someone's, oh, she needs to be bundled up in a sweatshirt and a blanket and she needs to be warm. And Emerson runs very hot. She has my blood. And what I notice is that when she is actually in a cooler temperature, she does so much better than when she's in a warmer temperature. If it's over 70 degrees in a room, she's going to be dripping sweat if she takes a nap. Like her head is sweating, her arms are sweating, everything is sweating. And she wakes up and she's very uncomfortable. And I'm the same way. Like I have to have it cold. So that's another thing. I know this for my baby that she likes the cold way more than she likes being warm. So there's always, but we always get comments. Why is she not in, why is she not wrapped up? Why is she not in clothes? Why is she not in pants and blah, blah, blah. It's like, dude, my baby runs very warm. My baby needs to be cooled off or she's going to be sweating. You put her in clothes for an hour, she's going to be sweating. Everyone inserts their opinion. No matter who it is, they're going to insert their opinion of what they think is right and that what you're doing is wrong. And I think the best thing to do is just do what you know is best for your baby. You're with them every day. You know what's going on, what works for you guys. I try to block out everyone's comments because you don't know anything about this baby. You don't stay with her. You don't sleep with her. You don't take care of her. So your opinions don't really matter to me.
I mean, we've heard comments about, is she breastfed? Is she this? And I gave her breast milk for 6 months before I threw in the towel. And I think it's strange that people want to know intimate details about your life. I don't need to tell you if my booby is in my child's mouth or not. Is she fed? She is fed. That's all you really need to know. Is my baby sleeping? She's sleeping. That's really all you need to know. So I get a little passionate about that. And quick rule of thumb to remind people about heat and temperatures. There's a saying that goes, a cold baby will cry, a hot baby will die. Because an overheated baby can die in their sleep if they're overheated and they won't make noises. But if a baby is cold, they will wake up and and let you know, hey, I'm cold, wrap me up.
The thing that happens when they get overheated is their body gets lethargic and it keeps them asleep longer, even if they're in distress.
Don't Google too much because you'll end up finding 900 reasons why your baby's going to die, which I'm very excited to pass the 1 year mark because the SIDS rates go down significantly. We've not escaped all dangers, but we've almost made it to 11 months and that feels good. I still worry pretty much every day about her, even to this day. Like, I will go after this podcast is done, I will go into the room and put my hand on her chest and make sure she's breathing. And I will like zoom in on the baby monitor sometimes. And if she has like a checkered shirt on or a shirt with hearts, I can look really closely to see if the pattern is moving, if she's breathing. That's how cuckoo I am. So I think that's all.
That's a wrap for us. Another thing is, if you guys have any questions about anything, you can always message us at the Roche Fam on Instagram. We like questions.
And I just want to say thank you to everyone who's taken the time to listen. There's over 150 people who have listened to our episodes. And I honestly didn't think this was going to reach more than Chastity. And so if you hung in here for the whole thing, I appreciate you. A lot of you have reached out to us directly and said that you're enjoying the podcast. And that really means a lot to us because this is fun on the side. I don't really expect anything to come out of it. But the love and support everyone's been giving us, it's just very encouraging. We're going to try and hit 100 episodes and we're going to try and release them every Sunday. But we're tired parents who are moving on top of me learning a new job, on top of parenthood.
Moving around and we're moving different states and buying different houses and fixing things up. And it's a lot.
I don't know why we decided to do this, but here we are. So
stay tuned for our next one.
Stay tuned for our next episode. Okay.
Bye.
Bye.